Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Wednesday, March 6th. It is about 7 or 8 minutes after 9. We're going to hear a few bills today, and then we're going to meet later this afternoon, so we won't adjourn. We will recess to a call of the chair at the end of this meeting. Present at the table are Vice Chairman Fairclough. We have Senator Bishop, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Olson, and Senator Hoffman. Senator Meyer has some personal tragedy that he is dealing with and had to leave today. So, first of all, we're going to hear SB 16, Board of Architects, Engineers, and Surveyor. And under bills previously heard, we are going to hear SB 23 after this one. But now, Margaret, if you could come up and tell us about SB 16, you have the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Good morning. My name is Margaret Dowling. I'm staffer, Senator Kathy Giesel. She's unable to be here today. She sends her regrets and has sent me in her place to present the bill to the committee. SB 16 revises the current law to allow the State Board of Registration for architects, engineers, and land surveyors to hire a full-time investigator. And the bill also changes the section dealing with licensing examinations so that those exams can be given by electronic means. Currently, the board shares an investigator with six other boards. The investigator must have expertise in each of the subject matters of these different boards and be familiar with the detailed regulations governing each board. Those other boards also have their own investigation needs. Total licensees that are overseen by the six boards number 18,000, and of that amount, 6,439 licensees are under the purview of the AELS board. That's about 36%. The board's primary mission, as you know, is to regulate the profession and also to ensure that specified level of competence for the licensees through testing, certification, and education. Through these programs, and by licensing these professionals, Alaska's public health, safety, and welfare are protected, as is the reputation of these professions. When complaints arise that someone is practicing without a proper license, or competency standards are breached, or perhaps regulations are violated, either the public or another member of that profession can bring that to the attention of the board. This would initiate an investigation, and if the complaint is filed, and should that complaint rest on the desk of an investigator who's spread too thin to address that complaint, then the public and the profession both will suffer. The AELS board regulates 15 engineering specialties. It used to be six, but last year they added 9 additional specialties. So you can see that engineering is becoming more specialized. And as the profession grows, so too do the number of licensees under purview of the AELS board. And so too do the number of claims. In 2012 alone, 490 new licenses were added under the purview of the AELS board. And in the last 15 months, 116 cases were opened for the AELS board, adding to an already heavy workload for that part-time investigator. Each complaint truly deserves the attention of the board and that investigator. With a growing workload and spread thin, trying to meet the needs of the six other boards, the investigator can't possibly keep up with the demands. Senate Bill 16, by providing a full-time investigator, will ensure that the board can properly oversee licensees, ensure that professionals comply with law, and protect the reputation and integrity of the professions under its purview, and ultimately protect the public health, safety, and welfare of Alaskans. I'd like to make a few comments about the fiscal note. We do have Don Haberger online. He's the director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. He'll be available to answer questions. But just generally, regarding the fiscal note, it's important to remember, as I know you all know, that regulatory boards must be self-supporting through licensing fees. The board, I've been told by the department, has a sufficient carry-forward program receipts to cover the initial costs, and the new influx of revenue will be generated in November and December as those license fees are due. Currently, the license fees are $125 for a two-year license, and if needed, that fee can be increased, and it's expected that the increase would be minimal because it's going to be spread amongst over 6,400 different licensees. So that concludes my remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions, and again, Don Habiger is online also to answer questions.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, through the chair. So the fees will pay for this extra position?
The fees must pay for it.
Must pay for it.
Yes.
And for some reason over time, the fees, for whatever reason, drop and they can't pay for the position, does the position get cut?
Don Habiger is online, and he can answer that question, I think, better than I can. But my understanding is that they maintain a fund level sufficient to forward fund. So there should be some cushion there in that fund. But again, Don Habiger can speak with more particularity about that.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Would you say Harbinger?
Habiger.
Habiger. Go ahead, Mr. Habiger. Would you comment on Senator Dunleavy's question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Don Habiger, and I'm Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, there is a mechanism by statute where a program or a board's revenues and expenses are annually reviewed. And there also is a practicality part of this, that every 2 years a license of any of our professional licensing groups renew their license. So with an annual review and then with a biennial renewal of license, we can adjust fees according to statute, and we can increase or in some cases decrease fees based on that equilibrium between revenues and expenses. And we do that every 2 years.
Senator Dunleavy?
So what you're saying is the license fees will pay for the position?
Through the chair, Senator, yes, that's correct.
And if the license fees, for whatever reason, aren't there, then the position goes away, or does it have to be backfilled with money appropriated somewhere?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we're required by statute to collect revenues that are approximately equal, and although as you get toward the end of a biennial cycle, there may be less revenue, and we may have to do a fee adjustment to kind of backfill, but it's a relatively short cycle, and really we're collecting money 2 years in advance of all expenses, so it'll fill the pot again.
Okay, thank you. It's just because there's folks around the table, including myself, that are interested in keeping an eye on how much we're growing the size of the operating budget. So, again, if I'm hearing that the fees will pay for it, that's what I'm hearing. So thank you.
Senator Bishop.
Hey, Don, this is Click Bishop. Hey, along the same lines there, while we're talking about the revenue, so you have the ability in statute, is that just a reg change, is that by regulation or by statute, to increase revenues if you need to?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the statute requires us to collect revenues to equal expenses, or approximately equal is the language, and then we have to adjust fees through the regulatory process. So we will put our suggestions. First of all, it goes like this. We do our analysis. We talk to the board. The board says, yes, we can support that, or they may suggest some tweaks. For example, there might be different kinds of licenses, and they'll say, let's add a little here, let's take a little there. After that discussion, it goes out in a reg package. Everybody gets to comment on it, and then it's typically adopted after that comment period, and then the fees are set for the next biennial cycle.
Okay, one more follow-up, Mr. Chairman. So your workload has increased by 116 cases. Are you seeing more fraudulent, maybe, cases coming about since the recession? And I was reading the sponsor statement.
Go ahead, Mr. Habiger.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, off the top of my head, I'm not sure what kinds of cases we're seeing. I do know we have some of our board members here with me in the Anchorage LIO, and perhaps they can actually answer that better than I can.
That's fine. You can get back with me offline. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Habiger. We're going to go to Mr. Hightower. Did you want to comment on this, or are you just listening?
I'll just comment briefly. I've mainly echo what previous statements. I will, for the record, my name is Harley Hightower. I just completed 8 years serving on the board. I've been a practicing architect in Anchorage since 1974. I would say our board is one of the second or third largest boards and one of the most complex, and it's very difficult for a investigator to keep up with all of our statutes and regulations plus four or five other boards. So, and relative to our fee structure, I'm licensed in various other jurisdictions, and our fee is very reasonable, so we're not creating a hardship for our registrants, even if we had to raise our fees a little bit. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hightower. Mr. Maynard?
For the record, my name is Colin Maynard. I am currently on the licensing board. I'm a licensed civil engineer in the state of Alaska. And I came to testify in favor of this. This has been a priority for the board for at least the last 2 years, and we almost got it through last year. As was noted, we now have 15 engineering licenses instead of six. We also have the architect, landscape architect, and land surveyors. So he's basically going to be dealing with 18 different professions. About 4 years ago, I believe, we had actually 2.5 investigators for our board, but through attrition, it has gone down to now we're sharing him with six other boards. And because we have so many licensees and so many cases, it's really hard for him to get those investigations done in a timely manner. And in addition, he basically is stuck in his office in Anchorage, and occasionally we'll get to Mattoo Valley or around Anchorage or down to the Kenai for a day trip to check out construction sites to make sure that they've been designed by licensed professionals. And he would like to be able to expand that by going to Fairbanks or Nome or Juneau every once in a while, so that we have a more even investigation or enforcement of the licensing laws. On the fees, I've been licensed for over 20 years, and the fees go up and down. 1 year they'll be 100, then they'll be 150, or 2 years later they'll be 150, then go back down to 125, and it's always adjusted to either make up or give back if the expenses go down. So all of the expenses of the board are covered by our licensing fees, and no oil money is used in supporting the board, and I urge you to support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Maynard. Janet Matheson.
This is Janet Matheson. I'm a registered architect in Fairbanks, Alaska, and past president of the AIA, the American Institute of Architects, Alaska chapter. I'm representing about 230 professional members of our chapter, and we do support this bill. This is a necessary change. We do need to enforce professional practice in the state for public safety reasons, and the geographic disparity of enforcement is difficult right now. Also, this particular change will be funded by professional licensing fees, and we're in favor of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Maynard, or Ms. Matheson. Dale Nelson in Palmer. Do we still have a Mr. Nelson online?
Hello?
Hello. Go ahead and testify. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. Yes, this is Dale Nelson. I'm a licensed professional civil engineer, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska Professional Design Council. Excuse me. And speaking for the APDC, we are in support of this Senate Bill 16, and the Alaska Professional Design Council represents the members of the APDC, or the Society of Professional Engineers, the Land Surveyors, the AIA, American Society of Civil Engineers, Landscape, and the Council of Engineering Companies of Alaska, and there's some others. And we represent, that membership represents another 5,000 to 8,000 members. This bill has been in the APDC's newsletter as to what it entails, and we've also had it through, as myself as the chair of the Legislative Liaison Committee for APDC, we've had it put up to our liaison committee as well, and through all of this notice that we have put out as APDC, we have not received any negative response to what is being proposed. And again, we support it, and the fees, as has been testified before, is picked up by us as the licensed members of the ALS board. And myself personally, I've practiced in the state since as a civil engineer since 73, and as Mr. Maynard spoke, it's, you know, the fees have been up and they've been down, but they cover the requirements of the board which we all sign as the public health and safety of the public, and as well as APDC, ask that you support this and get this approved for enactment. So I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Are there any other people online to testify? I don't think there are. We're in good shape. Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Bishop.
Just one quick follow-up. Margaret, is this person a PX or partially PX position?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, could you ask the question?
Is this the new investigator to be hired? Is that an exempt position?
I don't have the answer to that. I can get back to you, or Don Habiger might have the answer.
Mr. Habiger, did you hear the question?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Senator Bishop, this is not a PX position. This is a classed position within our ranks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Fairclough?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Habiger, can you tell me who will be responsible for this supervising responsibility of both the secretary and the investigator? I see that the line of command, at least on the investigator, is placed with the board. Is that accurate, that that's who would conduct an annual review, a performance review?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, we have an administrative role, day-to-day activity, HR support, evaluations, the ability to discipline if that were necessary. That lies with the division. The board has a direction from a standpoint on what kinds of activities, where they may want to investigate in the state, that sort of thing.
Okay. I was reading your fiscal note is why I questioned that, because I wanted to make sure that the board at least was aware that on the fiscal note it says the Range 18 to conduct investigations into alleged violations and will be directly responsible and accountable to the board. So the board won't be involved in any performance reviews?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, ultimately we're responsible for those. The way it has worked in practicality is that the board has a kind of an annual review process. They deliver that to the division, and we use that as guidance as well.
Chairman, Senator Faircloth. Thank you. Thank you. The only other question I have, it appears the secretary is a shared position. Is that accurate?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, no, the secretary is dedicated to the board.
So there's two dedicated positions now?
If this bill passes, that would be correct.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Okay, it's my desire to move this bill from committee. Are there any objections from the committee? Can I get a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move to Senate Bill 1628-LS0205-U from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. With that, the bill is moved from committee with individual recommendations. Please, everybody, remember to sign that paper. I just wanted to make a comment that at the beginning I said that we were going to recess from this meeting, but actually we will adjourn because we have a scheduled meeting at 1:30 that Senator Faircloth will be chairing. Next up we have SB 23, the ADA bill dealing with building a plant on the North Slope for LNG. Could the members of AEA and ADA step forward and testify on the bill? And I don't know that we have adopted a bill as our working document on this. We have? Okay. Please state your name and testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Sarah Fisher Goode, the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority.
Chair, for the record, my name is Ted Leonard, and I'm the Executive Director of ADA.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. There are a couple of additional items that the committee has received. We did provide a formal response to the committee with respect to questions that occurred when Mr. Leonard and I testified last week. So that is in members' packets if there are any additional questions or follow-up with respect to that. In addition, the fiscal notes have been revised, and I want to thank Ledge Finance and Senator Meyer's office and your office, Mr. Chairman, to help us work through the fiscal notes. You do have two fiscal notes now. There is one fiscal note with respect to the ADA operations. One thing that we will note on this is the original fiscal note showed revenues that were revenues to ADA, and it was determined that that really should show revenues to the state of Alaska. So what you're seeing are the revenues that would come back to the state of Alaska through ADA's payment of a dividend. You'll also notice that there is two-year lag on that, and that's with respect to how the ADA dividend is calculated. So I think the addition to the fiscal note is a comprehensive spreadsheet, and this in particular, I believe, was what Senator Meyer had really asked us to make sure that we provided, which shows the various parts and pieces of the legislation, the Interior Energy Plan, the other aspects of the legislation that's independent of the Interior Energy Plan, and showing a comprehensive look at the different parts and pieces of the legislation and other issues in the operating and capital budget. The new fiscal note is a fiscal note that addresses and shows that in the governor's FY14 request, there is a capitalization of the SETS fund, and both fiscal notes also note the $50 million appropriation to ADA for the plant. And I think with that, Mr. Chairman, we are here to answer any additional questions and follow-up that the committee may have.
Okay. Can I put those questions on hold for a minute, and we'll walk through the people online that want to testify so they can get on with their day if they have something else to do. In Fairbanks, Bob Sheftick. Hello, Bob. Do you have time to testify here? I see you. I see you're on for questions only. Let me just put you on hold unless you want to testify.
No, sir. If you have questions, we're here. Otherwise, the chamber and the gas utility are supportive, and that's all already been said.
Okay. Stand by if you would. David Messier from Tanana Chiefs Conference.
Hi, good morning. I'm Dave Messier from TCC. Good morning to the chairs and the committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on this legislation, SB 23. I'm the Rural Energy Coordinator for Tanana Chiefs Conference, the nonprofit tribal consortia that represents 42 tribes here in Interior Alaska. TCC would like to voice its strong support for the legislation in this bill, though we're uncertain as to the total economic effect natural gas will have on some of our rural communities. More affordable energy in Fairbanks, the hub for most of our villages, means more affordable energy for our communities. In addition, roughly half of our nearly 11,000 tribal members live in and around Fairbanks, and we believe this project will have a positive benefit on the local economy. Throughout the country, access to low-cost energy has led to increased economic activity and opportunity, and we believe that lower-cost energy in Fairbanks will be no different. We strongly encourage this legislation to move forward and believe that it helps address the needs of all of Interior Alaska and the state as a whole. At the same time, we want to encourage that this legislation only augments, but by no means replaces, some of the energy efficiency, alternative energy, and weatherization funding that the state has supported, which has and is continuing to have a real long-term impact on our communities. On behalf of TCC, we appreciate the legislators' efforts on helping to solve energy needs of all Alaska, both rural and urban. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Messier. Those are the only two people I think that we have online. Could I ask David Teal if you could come up and walk through the... You have... I'll wait till you get up there, David. Just take a quick at ease. Just for a moment. David, I think you had prepared a document, this one. It's in the members' packets.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Could you just walk through this with us, please?
Certainly. For the record, I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division. And the analysis that you mentioned is a just a way of separating the gas project from the other impacts of that are in the fiscal note. The fiscal notes include use of other financing mechanisms not directly related to the gas project. So what we tried to do here is say, let's just look at the gas project in isolation and compare the cost to the state versus the benefits to consumers. And in doing that, the top little box there is the cash from the general fund is $50 million in the capital request, $30 million in tax credits, which is mentioned in the fiscal note analysis but isn't directly shown on the fiscal note and probably shouldn't be. And then the additional general fund contribution to this, or in this case AHCC, but it amounts to the same thing, it's state expenditures of $125 million. So the total state contribution to this is $205 million. If that $205 million weren't spent and instead stayed in the general fund, we look at it, it could have earned $8.2 million if the earnings were 4%. So that's kind of the opportunity cost of this project, meaning that that's how much interest you lose if by spending this money. And to that, you have to remember that $125 million in the SETS fund will be loaned by ADA to the participants in this project, theoretically at about 3% interest. That's going to generate $3.5 million or so a year in interest earnings, of which ADA can potentially pay back about half of that to the state in dividends. And they also have some expenses that go with it. So this $1.6 million it shows as revenue from ADA dividends to the state is just an approximation. And that shows the net annual general fund cost of about $6.6 million. Then to compute the benefits, we take ADA's numbers of roughly 7,800 customers, saving an average of about $3,000 per year in fuel. So the customer benefits or consumer benefits are $23 million, giving a benefit cost ratio of 3.5, meaning that Alaskans benefit by $3.50 for each dollar the state puts into this project. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's a green light. What a benefit cost ratio means is that anything less than one, generally the rule is you shouldn't be doing it. The benefits are less than you're spending. But there's no particular benefit cost ratio that says this is a go. Also, you might be interested in knowing that in past alternative energy projects where there were hundreds of millions spent on projects, a benefit cost analysis far more sophisticated than this one was required. And in many cases, those projects had trouble reaching a benefit cost ratio of one. So this is a very high benefit cost ratio compared to some of the other investments that have been made in energy. Took it one step further and said consumers do have to pay to hook up, so they do incur some costs themselves. Those costs are primarily the cost of converting to natural gas. We just used a number of $10,000 per residence. All of this is changeable, but I'm not sure it really affects the analysis that much. Said if you borrowed at 4%, your loan would cost you $1,200 a year over a 10-year period, meaning that if you save $3,000 and you have to spend $1,200, you've still got a lot of money left in your pocket, and you still have substantial benefits, drops the total benefits down to about $13 million and still gives you a benefit cost ratio over 2. So I'm not speaking in favor of the bill or opposing the bill. It's just this is one way to look at it to see if the investment is a good one. And of course, this doesn't include any secondary impacts like propane in rural areas or in Fairbanks, or the potential for gas in Fairbanks to be used by the utilities and lower the cost of electricity in Fairbanks. It's a fairly unsophisticated analysis.
Mr. Teal, thank you very much. Unsophisticated, but I think you really cut to the chase, sir. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Teal, if you could come back up to the... Mr. Teal, as you looked at it, and you talked about it already, the theory of the propane being available to rural areas, whether you're up the road or down the river, it is one of the things that makes it attractive for the rural people that are there, and especially the rural legislators that are representing the greater Fairbanks area, and there's at least four of them here at this table. As we've seen this in the past, this propane theory has been floated before. What do you think it's at least a viable situation that we will have propane that will materialize in some of these smaller communities up and down the river and up and down the roadway?
Mr. Teal, that's a little bit out of your expertise. If you'd like to offer an opinion.
Way out of my expertise.
My real question, Mr. Chairman, has to do with the cost-benefit ratio. You talked about cost-benefit ratio earlier on, and I wanted to know from your standpoint, since you're kind of a numbers man, or you are a numbers man, as to whether you see this as a viable situation. Is that some of the questions, Mr. Chairman?
I doubt that Mr. Teal has prepared an analysis on the propane, sophisticated or otherwise, okay. But I bet Sarah could answer that, and if that's all right with you, Senator Olson.
Yeah, it's fine. Will can answer the question. Fine with me. Two opinions are better than one sometimes, unless it's confusing.
Anytime you want to jump in, David, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through the chair, Senator Olson, this is something that the Alaska Energy Authority is looking at and making sure that you know. I appreciate Mr. Thiel's analysis with respect to the dollars and how they benefit consumers. That's something that, in particular, that we've looked at quite significantly through our rural energy program, where we build bulk fuel tank farms and powerhouses. And our intention is on the AEA rural energy side is definitely to start looking at this and making sure where propane is made available that we are able to make a positive impact, where this would even be further enhanced by adding that information on propane to consumers for either heat or electricity production in rural Alaska. And in particular, I know the Northwest Arctic Borough has worked quite extensively on this, and so we do plan on engaging them with our regional energy planning and looking at how best to make sure that propane makes a positive impact in rural communities for consumers. And of course, as any evaluation, we want to make sure that it provides a positive impact, and that it's not, you wouldn't want to have fuel coming into a community that either costs the same or is somehow more expensive, which is, I think, the purpose of the benefit cost analysis, which we do as we look at these projects. So that is definitely something on our mind, and we want to make sure that we are able to provide propane. And in some respects, we think that the LNG actually to more rural communities, either on the road or the river systems, is made available, not just the propane, but actual LNG, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson, do you have other questions?
I do have other questions, but it's more on the bill as opposed to what David Thiel was there. Whenever we're ready to go ahead and ask, I can go ahead and ask him then.
Why don't you two just stay up there for a while in case there's a variety of questions on this? Senator Olson, why don't you go ahead and ask the questions?
Okay. Sir, would you mind just telling me, have you had any input from the LNG on this LNG proposal from the two refiners that are in the Fairbanks area? And here's the concern that I have is that the viability of these LNG refineries are one of the things that's, you know, obviously very important. And I just wonder, had you had any input from the refineries that are there, realizing that the Flint Hills one is two-thirds of it is shut down for various reasons?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we have had conversations with the refiners. When this LNG proposal was discussed last year, Golden Valley Electric Association and Flint Hills were actually partners with respect to potentially developing this mechanism that this bill takes over. And although they are no longer in partnership with respect to being a project proponent, we do fully expect that Flint Hills is a potential viable customer, that this is something that the LNG coming to the community and to the region could be beneficial for their operational costs. So that is something that we continue to explore with them as a customer. And again, this is also part of the due diligence process that the ADA technical team is going through to make sure that we have customers for the LNG and making sure that industrial load is fulfilled. And we have had conversations with the other, or members of the team have had conversations with the other refinery. We are looking at trying to address whether that would be this is a valid mechanism for them to become a customer, and then understanding a bit more of their concerns with respect to the bringing LNG into the communities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at that, though, it's all pretty obvious that the LNG energy that's going to be available to the people that are there, the businesses that are concentrated downtown, the areas that are going to be, you know, just for, you're going to essentially erode the home heating market that's there, that is in the in the concentrated area that is there. I guess what have you thought about doing to make sure that these refineries don't start to don't start to have a problem with being viable, though. I mean, they may be customers, but the concern has to do with they've got to market their product, and if their product becomes a smaller, shrinking customer base, what's the administration's plan to try and make sure that we can continue to have refiners here in the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that is something that we have been looking at and addressing. I think, you know, one of the issues with respect to the market share, because of the high cost of diesel fuel now, we are, you know, in a situation where I think there is a market share or an erosion of those customers currently without doing anything. And so I think that the circumstances that we have and the purpose and the catalyst that Senate Bill 23 is providing is to impact as many people possible. And of course the alternative is doing nothing, and I think that's a circumstance that will impact the overall economics in interior Alaska, including those refineries, including their customers. So I think it's important to kind of keep that in mind too, that we do have that broader viewpoint that we're trying to address with the Interior Energy Plan.
The concern that I have, though, has to do with not just the refiners, has to do with the heating oil distributors and those employees that are there, that if you've got a smaller, if you've got a shrinking customer base because it's being taken up by the LNG that's available now, the prices are going to go up for those customers that are usually in rural areas outlying the borough, as well as the distributors that are the weaker ones that are obviously having a hard time making payroll and hard time turning a profit. They are in danger of going out of business, and with that goes a bunch of highly skilled employees who are going to have to be retrained to go ahead and make it so they can provide food for their family. What's the administration doing to try and mitigate those circumstances?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I think this package actually, I think, helps to address some of those concerns with respect to addressing the cost, the operational costs of the refiners. So the intention of a refiner being able to be a customer will help lower their costs. So they could also be an LNG customer for their production. And again, I think without doing anything, that erosion of that customer base and the viability of that industry in the interior is a concern, regardless of whether LNG comes to the state or not. Mainly because when you have folks in heating costs and operational costs at extremely high costs, businesses are making decisions. They're shutting down now. They're shutting down and moving. People are moving, and so those are some of the issues that I think are being addressed. That does this plan address 100% of the folks that use diesel fuel for heat? It does not. But again, it's a catalyst to address and impact as many people and customers as possible, and to help build this out as much as possible.
My concern, well, first of all, let me make it clear that I'm not opposed to trying making energy prices more economical for people in the interior of Alaska. That's where a large portion of my voter base comes from. So I'm certainly I hear those cries out there, but there is another aspect to this. The unintended consequences of this bill is going to make it so you have a difference between the haves and the have-nots, those that have the availability to get natural gas and those that don't have that ability because of either location or whatever circumstances that are beyond their control. Has the administration made any provisions to try and make it so that there is a consideration that those have-nots have a way of, so they don't have to leave town, so they don't have to go ahead and shut their small businesses down in the Fairbanks area?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I think, again, I think the legislation starts addressing a significant portion of the current have-nots. I think as we continue on with our rural energy programs and the other programs that the Alaska Energy Authority has, additional financing options that ADA has available to them, I think our goal is truly to address with these types of proposals to address the have-nots. The legislature has had a variety of proposals and programs that have been in place to address this. for electricity. Of course, the Power Cost Equalization Program is the example of a program that provides a benefit to communities and areas and residents that do not have the benefit of being able to have a larger infrastructure type of project that provides the economies of scale. And unfortunately, in the situation in Alaska, we have a lot of scattered populations, as everybody in this room is well aware of, small populations, long distances, and we do have, there are disparities with respect to cost of energy. And I think the Alaska Energy Authority, through our programs, strives to make sure that we make positive differences and help positively impact those residents. It's a matter of, I think, again, this legislation provides impact to many people in a positive manner, but again, it doesn't address everyone. However, through other programs, we do have opportunities to positively address folks' energy costs in this state.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, just the last comment. I have not seen anything that the administration has done to try and mitigate the circumstances of the unintended consequences of what's happening here, and I think it's beholden to us to try and make sure that's available. To try and do it through the legislation, I think, is much easier, more efficient to be done by the department. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bob Shefchik, would you kind of comment on this conversation that's been going on here?
Yes, I could for a couple of things. As Senator Olson, through the chair, the Flint Hills Refinery main product is jet fuel. And so, not to speak for them, but I've heard them say that as a large customer, it benefits them more than it harms them. PetroStar is more complicated, as they provide both jet fuel to Eielson and heating fuel around town, but by and large, the availability of LNG should assist the economics of their refineries as well. And they haven't come out with positions saying that this is harmful to them in any forums that I have participated in. Your point on the how far does the LNG work is well taken, and that's one of the things the gas utility is working on, is to figure out a distribution network as widely as possible. And that will be a difficult task that will take more than a short discussion. And then finally, the accurate perception that there will be a negative impact on delivery jobs and distribution of fuel oil because there's necessarily less is accurate. To some extent, there's a belief that will be offset by a large number of trucking jobs bringing trucks back and forth from town. If you think about the logistics, there'll be 50 trucks a day each way, so you're looking at 100 to 150 full-time good jobs that are helping offset that change. Whether or not it's the same people or not, I think your description that the administration can play a role in helping ease that transition is accurate, but it's not a total net loss. There are losses and gains within the community. And I believe that responds to most of the questions you had based on my notes.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Take a break at ease.
We're back on the record. Committee members, any comments, questions? Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me how the dividend is affected inside the bill, how it proposes to affect the dividend to the state of Alaska, as well as the change in the in what we mean by net income now?
Excuse me, Senator Fairclough, I didn't hear that last thing you said. What we refer to as what?
On page 8, we're proposing a change to what the description is for net income.
Oh, net income, okay.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, my understanding that this is a technical change that was required through changes in GASB. The dividend calculation will not change. This statute just needs to change to reflect GASB changes. This is actually, this I think, at least in my history with AID and AEA, this is the second time that we've had to make an adjustment on the statutory definition for the calculation to comply with GASB's changes in net income. And if we may need to have Ted come to the table and explain that a little bit further if you need further explanation. But again, my understanding is just a technical change. The dividend calculation will not change.
I'd actually like Ted to come up and talk to it if we could, Ted. Go ahead.
Yes, Chair. Again, for the record, my name's Ted Leonard, Executive Director of AIDA. Through the chair to Senator Fairclough. Again, Sarah's correct. GASB has changed their definition of net assets to net position. So during the statute, we are going to change to match that. And it still flows through the balance sheet the same way. So whatever net position now, it used to be net asset, it'll still be net position. And that change is how the dividend is calculated. So according to our CFO, again, it was just to ensure that when we go through the calculation, we're still following GASB and the definitions are the same. So we can ensure that the dividend stays calculated in the same manner.
All right. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't matter, but I don't see any conversation about the capital cost that will be required for 50 trucks on the road or a discussion. So if we're going down this path, a road from the North Slope, I'm not sure what the traffic looks like on the road now, but adding 50 trucks a day may be significant to increase capital maintenance on that road. So do we know that?
To the chair, to Senator Fairclough, the 50 trucks would be at a full expansion of the system. The projection for the initial build-out through FY15 and starting out is about approximate 20 to 25 trucks. That capitalization is built into the $4 per NCF for the cost of the trucks. Now, on the road side, we are working with DOT and the commissioner and their roads people have said so far that they believe that this is manageable and it would not have a significant impact on the capital outlays that they have to do for or maintenance of the road. We are working with them and that will be part of the due diligence, and as we know more through going through the process, those numbers will be refined. But currently in our discussions with DOT, that they have not said that it would be a major impact, especially with the initial build out and the 20 to 25 trucks.
Thank you, Mr. Leonard. Senator Fairclough, any other questions?
The only other concern from our previous public hearing was the safety concern expressed by putting LNG on a road, and that's why I was asking about road maintenance and what that would look like, because that may be a concern.
Well, this bill has a long way to go, and we'll get those answers as it goes through the process, and they're worth answering. There's no question about that. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, had some of the same questions that Senator Olson had. From a refinery standpoint, early on months ago, I went and talked to some of my local fuel distributors in Fairbanks, and one of them quoted to me, he says, Click, if it saves Fairbanks, go for it. He says he had $350 million on the books, accounts receivable, that he hasn't got paid for from the previous winter because people are just in a tough bind to buy fuel, and there's the other one had over $1 million in accounts receivable for fuel oil that they were trying to collect from, and it is tough. But I agree with Bob Shefchik's earlier comments about having fuel gas as a source at the refinery could theoretically drive down their operating cost. And then, you know, we got 20 rail cars now, what, a day going to Anchorage for jet fuel. Maybe that'll help the Alaska Railroad, and we can get back up to, we'd like to get back up to those 100 plus cars a day going back to Anchorage for jet fuel and be competitive for our refineries. David, I want to thank you for your cost benefit analysis. It's a good piece of work, and as being the internal optimist, I think there's cost-benefit analysis that we can't even foresee yet in this bill as this project builds out and goes forward if we get to fruition. At the end of the day, Mr. Leonard, you still have to do the due diligence on this bill to see if it even is economical and the cost-benefit is really there back to the consumer. Am I right?
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, yes.
Thank you.
We've been very succinct on saying that we have to go through the complete feasibility analysis phases before our board would make a decision, and it has to be economically viable to the community, and it has to pay for the investment that the state makes into it through ADA.
Lastly, my Senator Olson and my district, our two districts, we're joined at the hip and actually cross over, and some of our constituents in the Copper Valley, I know one of them in particular has an $8,000 a week fuel bill, and we've got a letter of support from Copper Valley here in the file. Hopefully that we can get this gas soon to them quick enough so they can survive and hang on, and he is really struggling to make ends meet down there in Glen Ellyn. Also, you know, I can say that there are some vertical projects that could come to Fairbanks and be commissioned when we know that we have gas, new money, private money coming in to the community, which would be a good thing for Fairbanks. And lastly, just Senator Faircloth, I'll take just a little bit of literary license on the trucking piece. As someone at the table, I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, that actually worked on the construction of the Taps Hall Road in 1974. And during the peak in construction, we had, Pete, I think you might even, excuse Mr. Chairman, I think you even drove truck on that road.
There
was north of 500 trucks a day going up and down that haul road, coming and going. And it is absolutely, are we concerned? Absolutely. But there has been, not LNG, but bulker propane tanks been run up and down that haul road for the last 35 years. So is it a concern on road maintenance? Yeah, I concur with that. I really do. Way I look at it is it's a good shakedown cruise for the gas pipeline pipe, hopefully, that'll be going up and down that right away. So that's all my comments, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Faircloth, can you get a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move from the committee the CS for Senate Bill number 23, Finance 28-GS1738/C, with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. SB 23 has moved from committee with individual recommendations. I just want to thank everybody on that particular bill. Uh, both Ada and AEA and David from Ledge Finance for walking us through the fiscal note. One of the things about the fiscal note I think that's I really enjoy now is that it is totally transparent. I don't think there's anything in there that is a hidden cost or going to come and bite us in the rear end at a later date, or that members could ever say, well, gee, we didn't know it was going to cost this much. It's in there. As a matter of fact, there are things in the fiscal note that make the project look larger maybe than it is, because some of that money was in the capital budget already. And thank you all for working on that over the last few days. Let me look at my little schedule here. So this later on today, we're going to adjourn, and then at the 1:30 meeting, I think it is, Senator Fairclough will be chairing that meeting, and it will be on SB 21, the oil and gas tax bill. And appreciate everybody being back here on time, because we got a lot of work to do. That last couple meetings, pretty tough to dig through those presentations to go on for hours. And this time we're going to have another presentation, and then we've got public testimony, correct? Okay. And as I said, Senator Fairclough, who has seen this bill now the third or fourth time, will be chairing that committee. Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, that public hearing is scheduled to begin at 3 o'clock today, just so the public, if they're listening now, for SB 21.
Excellent. Is there any further business to come before the committee? Hearing none, we are adjourned till this afternoon.